Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Coming up on this episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast.
So the estate agent obviously got the photos taken, sent it off to whoever does their photoshopping for them. And do you know when you save a file, like the file saved as remove.weeds.whatever .jpeg.
Yeah.
And it was like, you didn't even change the file name. Like, it's all there.
So just like tens of thousands of people across this country, Kieran Mulqueen spent a long, long time trying to buy a home. As he searched through the listings on daft.ie and myhome.ie and estate agents' websites, he was taken aback by some of the tiny, frankly shabby properties for sale at ridiculously high prices. So he decided to take action. And not only that, but so many of the photos of various properties were clearly photoshopped. And many of them claimed to be in salubrious locations that were actually miles away. But Kieran didn't just laugh it off or complain to his mates. He started doing something about it. He started posting these adverts on an Instagram page he called Crazy House Prices. He wanted to call them out, to expose them. It obviously struck a chord. The page now has tens of thousands of followers and it's grown into other equally popular social channels. And Kieran himself has even just published a best-selling book called How to Buy a Home in Ireland. In our chat on this episode, he shares his home hunting story, the good and the bad and the ugly of property adverts, and a few thoughts on where it has all gone wrong.
The bunk bed ones get me. They really wind me up. The ones with 6-8 bunk beds in a room, €600 a bed. These landlords are getting $4,000 a month for one room in a 4-bedroom house, €16,000, like that kind of stuff.
Mm.
They are usually preying on the more vulnerable. Artisan, that's another one they use a lot, yeah.
Artisan, yeah. And this is like your bed is in the microwave.
Yes.
And the toilet is on top of the pillow.
If you're lucky.
The four Yorkshiremen, yeah. You were lucky. I lived on 2 cornflakes a day, right, in a piece of cardboard which was on fire, underneath a pothole in winter. And what disturbs you the most?
The children facing eviction, that's really tough. I just think because I'm a teacher, my empathy levels are quite high and yeah. That gets me the worst. I feel like it got to a point where some estate agents were taking the piss so much, almost so that I would post it. You know? Like,
Jesus.
I almost felt like every time I post them, they would go viral. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to stop because I'm giving these lads free advertising.
My full chat with Kieran of Crazy House Prices fame coming up in just a couple of minutes. But first, there's a massive showdown in Dublin this weekend. It's, of course, the Champions Cup rugby final, the European Cup of Rugby. And amazingly, Ronan O'Gara's La Rochelle meet Leinster in the Aviva Stadium in the Heineken Cup final. Well, the Champions Cup final, as it now is. And unbelievably, possibly half the country will be cheering for La Rochelle. Or will they? Roger's phone has been busy with well-wishers and calls of another nature. We got exclusive access to Roger's voicemails.
Hi, this is Ronan O'Gara. As you can hear, I've reached peak excitement ahead of the Champions Cup final on Saturday. Leave a message.
Rog, this is Paulie. I'm on my way up to Dublin on the train to offer you moral support. I'm going to wear a La Rochelle jersey and sit right in the middle of the Leinster contingent. Any Leinster fan found cheering will be dealt with summarily and immediately. Stay strong, Rog.
Rog, Matt Cooper. As a Cork man in Leinster, I know how threatened you'll feel on Saturday. There's a group of like-minded people who are coming to my house on Saturday. Brandon O'Connor, John Spillane, Micheál Martin for a meeting of the LRS. That's the Leinster Resistance Movement. If you need a safe house, Raj, you know where to go. Thank you.
Raj, it's Brian. Brian O'Driscoll here. little birdie told me that since you've moved to France, they've managed to civilize you, knock the edges off you, the Munster edges. Well, now that you're fully house-trained, Rog, you're more than welcome over to the ski on Saturday. Oh, sorry, that's clan ski for prinks after Leinster win. I mean, after the match on Saturday. DM me.
Rog, George Hook here. Matt Cooper asked me to ring you on behalf of the Leinster Resistance Movement. The meeting's on Saturday. Can you bring a couple of Frank and Walter's albums and two flagons of Tenora, please? I'll bring the Beamish and the politically incorrect opinions. Vive La Rochelle!
And good luck to both teams in the final, especially Rog. So let's get straight over to Kieran Mulqueen, the man behind the social media behemoth, Crazy House Prices. He started by telling me how it all got started.
It did actually start as a joke because I was, you know, we were trying, we were looking, not even trying, but we, you know, we were like testing the waters. Okay, we want to, you know, we want to start a family, want to settle down, want to buy a house, and we want to be close to, you know, her parents and my mom. So that it kind of started as a joke when with some mad houses that you'd see for sale around Dublin, and it just got really popular really quickly. And I just think housing is one of those things in Ireland, we're all obsessed, whether it's looking in if somebody's getting work done, looking in what's going on, yeah, finding out what our neighbours paid for the house, that kind of thing. It's just an obsession of the nation. And that's where it started. It started as a joke, and it took off from there. It's, I guess, some things are really shareable on the internet, I guess, and they can go viral quite easily. So mad house prices just seems to be one of them. And it just went from there. And then I'm not naturally a negative person. I'm usually quite positive about things. So I was like, I can't, this is all very negative. I need to do something with this. There's a lot of followers now. So I tried to turn it into a bit of a more positive thing, as well as throwing up the crazy house prices, but trying to guide people as to where, what they need to do, how to maybe navigate getting a mortgage, trying to put it in simple terms as well to make it digestible. And it's now led to a book, a best-selling book, actually, and all the rest. So it's just been a mad couple of years, but it did just start as a joke.
What was the trigger that made you set up the social media post of Crazy House Prices?
It was a tiny little house just around the corner from here, actually, up in Long Lane. It's up for sale again. Hasn't sold, shocker. But it was 6 foot wide. And the story goes that it was built because the builders started, I don't know how true this is, but it's a good story. The builders are building at either end of the road, and then, you know, they got the measurements wrong or whatever, and they were left at this 6 foot wide laneway.
Right.
And they turned it into a house, took a roof over it. It's been on like Airbnb and rented out for a while. It's like, it's in Long Lane. It's up for sale again. I think it was 265 when I posted it. I think it's down to 220 now or something. Right. But I do think it's sold in the boom for like 400 and something thousand.
Yeah.
It's great. Like it's hilarious, yeah, when you see it.
6 foot wide.
6 foot wide. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to lie
so
down.
So Liam Neeson wouldn't, yeah, be able to lie down there.
No.
He'd just be,
no,
his head would be crooked. And
no, I probably would. But
I know where you live, and it's not in the skinniest house in Ireland.
Yeah. So that was the one that kind of set it all off. It was just a joke, really. It wasn't ever something we were looking at buying, but I was like, this is 265 grand. This thing is outrageous. Mm. Obviously, it's aimed at, you know, an investor that wants to.
I thought
to
you were going to say it was aimed at dwarfs.
Yeah, that as well. Yeah. But it's it's not a home. You couldn't live in this thing. Like the bed is in like the attic, and you know the way estate agents use these like wide angle lens. Mm. It makes it look, even that doesn't make it look big.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't be able to sit up in the bed. You'd have to kind of like roll out to the side.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunk bed in the hallway. And I think there's like some fancy paint, like stripes on the wall, which obviously adds 200 grand. It's a hilarious, it's only up the road. You should walk past it. The photos are the same photos from like 10 years ago.
I've seen open top buses going outside it.
Yeah.
With people with like Viking splash and everything going, here is the house of the leprechauns. You have to be beneath 5 foot tall to live here. A lot of leprechauns are.
That could be the angle for them, actually. Maybe that's who they need to market it at. Yeah,
it's at Bord Fáilte, tourist attraction.
Yeah. Yeah.
But since then, you've become something of like a Batman kind of figure, like, you know, a caped crusader of crazy house prices, you know. And this is obviously Gotham City. And
yes.
You've kind of posted these pictures and stories of dreadful propositions that people have been asked either to rent or buy. Take me through some of the ones in at the top of your mind that never leave your mind, that reflect the kind of state of the nation at the moment in regards to that.
It's usually the rentals. I think renters here are just in such a dire situation with the price of it, and then obviously the quality of what's available for them. So it was like when you're buying a house, there's solicitors involved, you know, you're not as vulnerable. If like the kind of funnier ones in houses, just like the house is in bits and they're asking for mad money, but if it's not worth it, people won't pay it. Whereas they move on to the next. But renters are far more desperate because there is nowhere affordable to rent. And you don't have that kind of safety net of solicitors and legalities involved. It's like Gotham, I guess, in that aspect. Maybe a bit more crime.
Yeah.
But it's I guess the bunk bed ones get me. They really wind me up. The ones with 6-8 bunk beds in a room, €600 a bed. These landlords are getting $4,000 a month for one room in a 4-bedroom house, €16,000, like that kind of stuff. It really winds me up and gets me quite angry because it's just pure greed and horror, and they are usually preying on the more vulnerable, those that can't buy their own home or maybe don't have a secure enough job to even apply for a mortgage or whatever the case is. It's that I find those ones sickening, and there are so many examples of it. That's the other scary part, is they're relentless. I get sent them every single day, like loads and loads of different ones, whether it's somebody renting a shed in their house in Clondalkin.
Well, this is another thing, of course. Yeah. This isn't even a property then. This is just a shed.
Yeah, yeah.
A shed in Clondalkin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I just put
advertised
that one up
for
£1,200 a month, like, and it's
a shed in Clondalkin.
That's the gig here, isn't it? That's the way the property market is. It almost feels like a lawless kind of society sometimes, like Gotham, I guess, where they can do whatever they want, because there's not much happening. And then I do get kind of, sometimes I get that feeling where I'll post something on Twitter and it will go viral, and then the ad will be removed, and everyone's like, oh, well done, you got it removed, that's great.
Yes.
And I'm like, but that's not my job.
No.
You know, it shouldn't.
I've seen that over and over again, how you even then say in the comeback on the Twitter, new record, only 30 seconds. Mm.
Yeah, and it's not that it's because of me or whatever. It's the community.
Oh, I understand.
It's the community that the page has built, and I'm just like the one that presses send.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, it is like, I almost call it like a community, like detectives. You know, they're finding things or investigating things.
But it's not just sheds in Clondalkin either. There's the classic stuff which we used to talk about even 10 years ago. The idea of, you know, this is a Bijou studio proposition in close to the city and close to the river.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And basically it's, you're kind of
artisan. That's another one they use a lot. Yeah.
Artisan. Yeah. And this is like, this is like your bed is in the microwave.
Yes.
And the toilet is on top of the pillow.
If you're lucky.
The four Yorkshiremen. Yeah. You were lucky. I lived on 2 cornflakes a day, right, in a piece of cardboard which was on fire, underneath a pothole in winter, with the Russians coming over and a tank. Lucky if you weren't shot to death before you were woken up.
And it was still cheaper than what you're paying here. So, yeah, it's It's the pits, really, to be honest. It's a very depressing kind of thing to be around all day.
Those kind of situations, bijou apartment, microwave and all this sort of stuff, Clondalkin. Another thing we expose, which I think is interesting, and it taps into this classist thing we have in Ireland as well, and particularly in Dublin, is this. You'll see an ad on a certain real estate site, and it'll go, you know, lovely three-bedroom house just on the edge of Malahide. And you'll find, actually, it's in Finglas.
Yeah.
And I don't know what your definition of on the edge of Malahide is. Do you know that one?
Yeah, I have a whole kind of highlight saved on my story. I've actually stopped doing those ones because I feel like it got to a point where some estate agents were taking the piss so much, almost so that I would post it. You know, like
Jesus.
Like there
like
is no
very
such,
meta.
There's no such thing as Finglas anymore. It's Glasnevin. There's no such thing as Darndale anymore. It's Malahide. You know, it's like the fake addresses, and I almost felt like every time I post them, they would go viral, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to stop because I'm giving these lads free advertising, and it's nothing's going to change, you know, in terms of that kind of fake address thing. But it's kind of a notions thing we have as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I meant it taps into that class thing we have.
It's just,
you don't live in Ballybrack. You don't live in Killiney. You live in Ballybrack.
Yeah, but you paid 100 grand extra.
Yeah, but I remember my mother lives in Stillorgan. And this is exactly what you do, right? My mother lives in Stillorgan. Now, she lives just off the N11. And the postal address of her house is Blackrock.
Yeah.
Right. Now, she lives in Stillorgan, but the postal address is Blackrock. So when she says, where do you live? Blackrock. Anyway, letters used to come to the house anyway. And you could see that they'd been interfered with by the postman, right? Who'd crossed out the name Blackrock himself and gone, Leopardstown! Sorry about that. Leopardstown. In other words, even the postman is full of spite about where you live. So that explains that to you as well.
Yeah, there's a really funny one. I have an image of it on my phone. I posted it a while ago. There's a place in Perrystown. That's where it is. But on the rock out the front of the estate, it says Manor Estate. And underneath it says Terranure. And somebody wrote a sign saying, Terran, you're my arse, and put it beside it. And it's just brilliant. And the story goes that that rock out the front was paid for by the residents. They paid to get this rock out the front to say it's Terran, you're, when it's whatever, Walkerstown or Perrystown or whatever. But like, I just find all that so funny because it's just so ridiculous.
It's
like,
this petty bourgeois thing in Ireland. And it's because you could be living in a really posh area, which is actually right next door to a kind of, might be described as a lower middle class area.
Especially in Dublin. You're never more than 2 minutes away from somewhere that, you know, you might feel a bit scared walking down the road. Like, it doesn't matter where you live. So,
come here. What do you think of real estate agents?
I think there are some really good ones, and I think there are lots of,
you should see his face, folks, it's just gone puce.
I'd be pals with some estate agents, and they're lovely, and they've been really helpful to me and told me kind of, you know, insider kind of secrets as to what they do. And
but if I'm judging, not to land you in it now, right, I'm being serious, if I'm judging by what I would see on your Twitter profile, for example, and the stuff you just repost, I kind of left mouthing the words, fucking scumbags. That's honestly the way I feel. What are you doing? It's so low. And there's another thing that we didn't cover. The airbrushing of photographs. Tell us about that, what you can...
Well, I guess, like, with the estate agents thing, like, there's obviously, like any gig, you know, not all men, not all estate agents, hashtag. You know, there are some that just really give them an awful name. And the way I think about it is, instead of me calling this out, other estate agents should be calling it out and saying, do you know what? This guy, what he's doing is not okay. Mm. And it's given us all a bad name.
Mm.
Rather than just, you know, burying their head in the sand and ignoring it. Like, there are some estate agents that have just such dodgy practices. And as far as I know, there's no estate agent has lost their license for like things like fake bids, which do happen. Mm. But I just don't know if any of them have lost their license. Mm. But the airbrushing thing, I remember there was a really funny one I did. I posted, I can't remember where it was, but it was like the whole image was doctored. They all do the sky, by the way. Yeah. If you're looking at an ad, these blue skies.
That's I never knew the sun shined in Ireland so much.
They all do that. Every one of them. That's and because they all do it, it's just standard now that it's just become normalised, which I think is ridiculous.
I know what you're going to say next. You're going to say, now they're going to start doing ones with clouds just to stop being like the lads with blue sky, so that the ones with clouds, they'll think they're actually real and the house is actually real then.
Even one of them was like, I just posted because it was so outrageous. The street view. I always tell people, look at the street view.
Okay.
Look, go onto the ad, Google. Click on street view and have a look, because that's what it really looks like.
Okay.
Rather than the doctored image.
Yeah.
But the street view had like, you know, there was the estate agent had basically wiped everything out of the front of the house and photoshopped in a railings and photoshopped in this lovely tarmac and flowers and all. And then the street view is like, it looks nothing like that. It looks ridiculous. And to be fair, that went viral and the estate agent took it down and put up the real photo. And then I was looking at one the other day and the photos, like, so they said the estate agent obviously got the photos taken, sent it off to their, whoever does their photoshopping for them, and do you know when you save a file, like the file saved as remove.weeds.whatever .jpeg and it was like you didn't even change the file name, like it's all there, and then it's like just this fake looking tarmac driveway, which I think is awful anyway. I would rather see a driveway with some weeds or wildflowers, as I like to call them.
Yeah.
You know, something real. Like, I think the whole tarmac thing is awful. But anyway,
I know.
Is it like the file name? He didn't even bother changing that. So that comes up when you look at the image and you can see the file name is remove.weeds.
Yeah.
.clouds.
I saw one where in the corner of one, it was Brian O'Driscoll and Amy Huberman were just in the next garden. I was going, oh my God, you're going to be living next door to Brian O'Driscoll and Amy Huberman if you buy this. Sorry, that's only a joke. But that's what they're going to start doing. They're going to, what about we just start putting like well-known celebrities into the road?
Yeah, peering that, like, over the fence.
So like, let's say Michael D. Higgins suddenly lives in Perrystown.
Manor Estate. Taryn, you're actually.
Manor Estate. excuse me, it's Perrystown.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Madness.
Think
of other ones. You're on a roll now. This is good. I like the airbrushing.
Yeah, the Photoshop. See, that kind of stuff I like posting, because it's a bit more, no one's getting hurt there, you know. When you go and view the house, you'll see what it actually really looks like. So no one's getting hurt, but I do think it's just really frustrating that every other industry has to abide by pretty strict advertising laws.
Yes, yes.
But as I think the way, because I've reported these over the years and I've just given up because nothing ever happens. But the way I think the explanation was from the advertising standards or whatever was that buying a home is seen as an investment.
Mm.
So it doesn't follow under the same advertising laws as if you're trying to sell a chair.
Correct. Or politics, by the way, Kieran.
Well, yeah.
In when you're selling politics, you don't have to do that as well. So in America, for example, hence the attack ads.
Yeah.
So it's like, Joe Biden is a pedophilic serial killer. Do you want to vote for a pedophile? And Joe Biden will just go, I'm not a pedophile, okay? Doesn't matter. We're saying you are. And they can get away with it because it comes under the auspices of political advertising. And this is what you're saying, that this is an investment.
So because it's an investment. That was the explanation that was given to me. Yeah, they don't fall under the same rules, which to me is really irritating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating
creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
My own story, like just juxtapose what people are going through now with somebody like me, right, who's 52 years of age. And I come from just that generation ago where I bought my first house when I was 29. Yeah. And I wasn't on loads of money. And in fact, I was freelance. So I wasn't even a civil servant.
Yeah.
And it was back in the time where you were able to get, I think it was about 3 times your salary from the bank. Okay. But because I was as freelance and because I was intelligent. No, not intelligent. It was more, I was hustling. And I wanted to make sure, I did my best to make sure it happened. I created all these sort of like mad projections of what I would be earning in the next couple of years, which are fanciful. And then they also gave me way more than 3 times. And those were back in the days where it was all a bit like, you'd be grand, we're all going to get a house anyway. So like, have you got anything coming in at all?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, should we give you a house then? You know what I mean? Mm. And obviously now it's not neon impossible, but it's a much different situation, you know?
Yeah, and that's the reference I always tell people to say, not saying you're old, but, you know, previous generations, let's say their grandparents or their parents.
I'm in that stage of life. You know when they're allowed to call people middle aged now until they're about 78?
Yeah.
So I'm in middle age.
I'm in middle age.
Yeah.
So we're together. But, you know, I always say that to people, you know, if you're, you know, getting grief from a parent or a grandparent saying, do you know what, you just need to book up and save and you'll get something. Just be like, okay, how much did you buy your first home for? Or you could say, what were you earning at my age, grand? Well, multiply that by 3.5 times and go and find me a home online that you would be happy to live in. Mm. And that pretty quickly, you know, takes their edge off. And I think things are turning in terms of people are starting to understand that, like, this generation, it is statistically proven that it is the hardest time to buy a home, given, I know interest rates used to be much higher, but you got mortgage interest relief and all this other thing. So they've, like, Dara Turnbull in Housing Europe has done the numbers on this, and it is actually harder. And that was a year and a half ago, and it's worse now. And a year and a half ago, it was the hardest time in generational history.
So it follows my next question. Do you think that the situation has got worse in both sectors, the rental section and the buying sector, since 2019, since you kind of started this?
Oh yeah, 100% worse. Rental, way worse. As I said, housing, you know, you have some legalities there, but renting, I just see it all the time. People are messaging me being like, what can I do? I'm being evicted. The landlord wants to sell up. I've nowhere to go. I have 2 kids.
Jesus, yeah.
We both have full-time jobs. Yeah. We both have good jobs.
The thing is, the thing
earning more than me.
The thing that isn't highlighted enough about this, Kieran, as well, is when you say those statistics to me and you even just say about that person, I'm being evicted, I have 2 kids, I've nowhere to go. We always paint that as an economic problem, whereas actually it's a mental health and psychic problem. This, like, has countless damaged people.
Kids especially. That's,
for life. Yeah. The trauma of not having a roof over your head lasts for years and years and years, forever.
Yeah.
You'll never forget that. You'll be waking up at night. Even if you're living in a castle when you're 80, you'll be waking up sweating at night going, I just had the dream again about when I had no home.
Yeah, it's the kids one that really gets me, that just they, children, just because we have our own child now and she's like nearly 1.5, She doesn't have to worry about that, and she's so lucky. But there are so many children that will worry about, you know, because they pick up on things, you know, they're very intuitive. They pick up on if their adults in their house are feeling stressed and feeling nervous about something, or they'll overhear things. And it's that I just think the impact that will have for decades on that child or teenager or whoever, is catastrophic. And I think, and it's why I get really passionate about, you know, talking about it online, is because, you know, there are solutions there. It doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this difficult. We can fix this. You know, there are solutions that we could even borrow from elsewhere, or things we could try if there was, not to get political, but if there was the political will there to actually treat this like they did a couple of years ago. I'm not going to say that word, but like they did a couple of years ago, where they did treat it as an emergency, and all of a sudden they did find money to do things they needed
Kieran,
to do.
Kieran, I couldn't agree more. This is what I've been saying all the time, and I've spoken over the years to people in various walks of life, economists, politicians, journalists, and I'm fascinated by this question of when you say to people, we need to do this, we need to do this, we need to do that. And the first thing that comes out of their mouths is,
But
who's going to pay for it? But who's going to pay for it?
Well, we've all this money now. It's billions and billions.
And then you go, well, who paid for the C word? Who paid for all of that? And who pays for the emergency when it happens? The big emergency when it happens? Because they do. They find the money somewhere. And where's all this budget surplus that they talk about? What's going to happen to that? And what about the idea that Ireland is one of the richest countries in the world? Can we not borrow on the strength of that? You know, this is that's one of the things that galls me. But to that end, there's another side to this as well. And from your exposure to this problem, I mean, because I have a follow on from this as well, but from your exposure to this problem, do you have any opinions as to politically yourself, if there's a political, if a change of our political furniture could help solve this problem?
I think,
in your own opinion.
Yeah, I think we need more empathetic people in charge. I think empathy is something that is lacking massively in our leadership. I think they lack an awareness as to what it's actually like to face that worry of losing your home. And it's just, I just don't think it's there. But then I also know it plays to their own voters to, you know, kind of keep this whole pyramid scheme of housing prices going, because their value of their, because they own their own homes, a lot of their voters. So I know what you're saying. Like, I don't know if, like, the polls are true and Sinn Féin get voted in or whatever. I don't have, if there was an election tomorrow, I couldn't tell you who I'd vote for. But I don't know if Sinn Féin are going to be able to fix things either, or if they would, if they, you know, make things worse. I don't know, but I do know that it requires a complete shift in how we view homes. Instead of viewing them, housing, as a commodity and as something to try and keep propping up and to try and keep investors happy and keep developers happy, and just focus on, we have 4,000 children homeless. They shouldn't be homeless. How do we figure this out? We've got 165,000 vacant homes around the country. Can we get even half of them back on site? What do we need to do that? We have loads of money, apparently, because the last couple of years, all we've heard from government is, well, you know, Sinn Féin's plans will cost this. There is no magic money tree. Well, there is.
There is,
There's a feckin' money orchard there. We've loads of money.
Yeah.
If we're going by how great the economy is and blah, blah, blah.
Well, your man is there. It's unbelievable. We have a budget surplus of 4.8 million, which I've just found behind the couch. And will that be going to houses? Fuck off. No, it won't. It'll be going for what? The rainy day fund. What's the rainy day fund? The day that we need the money. Do we not need the money now? No.
Yeah, it's lashing out.
Jesus, it's lashing out.
Yeah, and that's what's like, the orchard has grown. We've lots of money trees, but we're all in puddles outside. And I just don't understand. I don't know if other parties will come in and fix things. I would like to hope that something can change and something can be done that whoever is in next might say, you know, do you know what I think the issue is? They think in 4-year cycles in government, and they don't want to do something that may benefit whoever's in government in 10, 15, 20 years.
That's correct.
Time. They just think in 4-year cycles and trying to stay in power, keep their big pensions and whatever.
They also do the opposite. They also go, by the time we leave power, we want to make sure that things are in the shit. So that the next guys,
back in.
So that the next guys inherit the shite,
poison,
so that
the well,
then we'll be able to say it's shite now with the new lads in. So put us back in.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think now I don't know how this would work, but I just feel like it needs to be something that is taken away from a political party, and it has to be something that is
that's interesting
agreed across the board.
Yeah.
no matter who's in power, that this is our 20, 30, 40, 50 year plan.
Well, that's interesting. Taking it away from politics, yeah.
And taking it away from...
I hear what you're saying. And I will say one thing, another thing, and this is to obviate part of this argument. And I had a couple of weeks ago, I had a brilliant economist on called Chris Johns, who's an excellent speaker, very articulate man, and a very fair-minded person in my view. Now, he is right of centre when it would come to the economics and all that sort of stuff. He's an economist, but he's a bit of a political philosopher as well, and an erudite guy. And he did make the point, and of course this is regarding our just chat there about Sinn Féin and politics and everything, and kind of interesting that you mentioned it should be taken out of politics. That's a nice idea. But he did mention that this problem is typical of a lot of problems that are far more complicated than it seems on the surface. It requires detail, technocratic attention. It requires hard work. And it really doesn't need soundbites, and it isn't solvable in soundbites. And unfortunately, you do get that sort of feeling from, let's say, call it a populist effort, let's say, from Sinn Féin, who goes, we'll solve it, we'll sort it. You know, make housing great again, almost, you know?
Yeah.
That's the problem, you see. The problem is that we've lost the ability in our society to understand that some problems are actually really complicated, because we don't want complicated. We want 120, 140 characters or no less.
Yeah.
No more.
Yeah, thanks. I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the problems we face, that we're unwilling to accept that a problem is complicated. Once you're not willing to accept that a problem is complicated, you're less willing to engage with the problem. You're just sort of going, give me the easy answer, or don't give me any answer.
I think people's...
But I loved your idea. I think that's the first time I've heard that, actually.
Yeah.
The idea that this particular crisis needs to be taken above politics, but away from politics.
So no matter who gets into power, they have to be signed up to this agreement.
To this commission, let's call it a commission.
Like in Europe, say. Do you know? Going back to your point there, I think everyone understands it's very complicated, but what we keep hearing is it can't be fixed overnight.
Mm.
But it's been 12 years.
Yeah.
So, and it's only getting worse. Mm. So I think soundbites... I think that word even itself is a soundbite, do you know? He's saying it won't be solved by soundbites. That itself is a soundbite. But what will solve it is if we get a lot more homes that people can live in.
Yeah.
And I just think there are some easy wins that can be done that don't cost any money and will actually generate money. Things like a hefty vacant home tax. Like walking up here, I just walked up here from Dame Street and just look up. Well, if anyone's walking around, just look up, look above shops, look above retail units and look at how many derelict places there are. Look how many empty places there are.
Yeah.
Walk around your local neighbourhood and I guarantee you'll find a lot of vacant homes, a lot of derelict homes, no matter where you are. So if you own one of those and it's not costing you anything, but in fact, it's actually still going up in value. What incentive is there to actually turn that into a home? It's already built. There's already a structure there. You don't need planning. You don't need to do a whole lot. Like, I do think that is... I know they'll say it's complicated, blah, blah, blah. But is it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it more complicated to fix something than to build it from scratch?
Mm.
I don't think so. Mm. And I do think that is an easy win that doesn't require a populist party to come in and do. It just requires... someone to be like, can we just feckin' do this? Can we put a 10% tax on this? Not a 0.03% tax or whatever they brought in that costs nothing. It's three times the local property tax.
Yeah.
It's less than a grand a year for most.
Yeah. How many people are in touch with you? And what kind of...
What kind of people?
No. I meant, you alluded to it earlier on, but I'd like to go into that a little bit deeper. How many people are in touch with you, do you think? And more people are obviously in touch with you. And what's
like a week, a day?
I don't know. You tell me. We make.
It's like literally every free minute I have, I'm trying to get back to people in my DMs. Mm. It's I would say probably on average, a couple of hundred a week.
Yeah. And what's the typical message that keeps coming back at you? What's the one you're seeing over and over again? And what disturbs you the most?
The children facing eviction, that gets me the most. Yeah, that's really tough. Adults, whatever, you know, some people be able to move back home or whatever. Like, yeah. Obviously very empathetic to that as well. But I just think because I'm a teacher, I actually teach infants, my empathy levels are quite high, and yeah. that gets me the worst in the messages. And it's just like, what can you say? What can I do? There's nothing. I wish I could help more. I'm doing everything I can to try and, you know, bring about some amount of change. Like, and I have, you know, the page has had success in that aspect. Like, there was one thing, I don't know if you saw, it was a good while ago, about a housing estate that was built and people, you know, were ready to buy, and the whole thing was sold to an investment fund. It was Mullen Park, I think it was called, and I was like, this is ridiculous. So I posted it and it just went everywhere, and then it ended up, you know, getting very political. Politicians were standing outside the estate, you know, making videos, and every TV station was there and whatever. And it did happen that the government stepped in and were like, no, we're not having this. We're stopping that deal, and the homes now need to be sold to owner occupiers. So that was a really big win. And I did get loads of messages from people saying, like, I'm sitting on my couch, I'm watching TV in this house now that I wouldn't have been able to buy.
Yeah.
Only that it went viral on Twitter or whatever, or Instagram. And so, like, there are wins there, but it's like, I wish I could do more, but it, like, sure, who am I? Do you know what I mean? I'm nobody. I'm just somebody with
Batman.
A phone.
Yeah. Fucking Batman.
I feel like Fat Man at the moment. That was about it. But
I have to interrupt you there. There's some people who are listening to this podcast live. And
it's not live, is it?
Huh? Some people who are listening live to the podcast, and when I tell them who's coming on, they go, oh, I'd love to listen to that live, and can I call in?
Right.
And so there's a few people on the line that like to talk to you. So yes. Antisha Cleo Varadkar's on the line. Say hello to him.
He's a neighbour of mine, actually. Hi, Leo.
How you doing? It's great to hear you. I'm a neighbour of yours, that's right. Yeah, I often see you doing your lawn there. Listen, I never really, first of all, a few questions for you. I didn't realise that the problem was so bad. But thank you for doing that. Second of all, just if in not to use the word soundbite, but because that's a bit of a cliche. But if you did give me a soundbite, just tell me one thing that we could possibly do to solve this, or to help. If you were me, that's my first question.
I think caring more would be a good start. You know, actually, really understanding and talking to people who are in a situation where they are facing homelessness with excellent jobs and
okay, great, got
whatever.
That, Jeff. Thanks. So, I've just written that down. Second thing is, you used a word earlier on it. I didn't understand it. It was herpathy. It begins with energy.
Empathy.
What's that, Leo? What's that about?
It's about putting yourself in someone else's shoes and trying to see things from their perspective and understand, not just see it, but understand it. Yeah,
that's great. Thanks a million. And the third question is, I know this is a bit of a coincidence, but I'm actually the owner of a rental property myself in Castleknock, and it's being vacated in the next couple of weeks. Just wondering, would you put it up on Twitter? It's just $5,000 a month.
Well, yeah, I'll take the first month's rent. Yeah,
and I have a stone outside going Castleknock, massive. So thanks, you'll do that for me.
No problem.
Crazy house prizes.
Yeah,
thanks very much.
Wow, jeez, you were very nice to him.
I tend to be nice to most people. Yeah,
you're too polite. Well, let me see. Anything else? What other stuff is on your mind about this area, even recently, Kieran? Is there anything else on your mind about this now? I mean, you have a day to day life as a teacher.
Yeah,
you're empathetic. Your wife is a teacher. Is it Melissa?
Yeah.
Melissa. And where does she teach?
She's in Lucan. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she teaches in Lucan.
And does she feel similar to you about this stuff, or does she go, would you ever fuck off about your house fucking prices?
Yeah, more the latter, to be honest. Yeah. She's fed up with me going on about it. No, she, like, obviously, but she's, I probably, she's so many, like, I don't know, I probably worry a bit too much about it, but then it's like, it has become, you know, like a part of me.
I know, yeah. And where's that going to go?
Let it go.
Where's that going to go?
I don't know, to be honest. Like, I just can't let it go. I just want to try.
You spoke about empathy and caring, and it's clear that, it's clear you teach young children.
Yeah.
It's clear that you care. Maybe you need to take it a little further, or maybe you need to, I mean, maybe you need to get involved a bit more. Jump in.
I'd like to see some changes in things that I think would help. Like, I'd like to see how we buy a home, like the process of buying a home. I did a chapter on it in my book. Mm. I'd like to see some things change so that it improves the whole process for people, in terms of, like, for example, a big issue is, you know, the home isn't actually ready to be sold, but it's advertised, and then people are ready to buy it, but then they're strung out, they're dragged out for 9 months or whatever. Like, in other countries, you can be in and out in a month. You know, you can go say the greed to keys in hand in 4, 5, 6 weeks. Hmm. So I'd like to see changes there that would make that, like, for example, if, let's say, I want to sell my house, I should have to do all the work necessary beforehand so that the house is ready to be handed over the next day. So if it's in probate, the probate should be through.
Yeah.
If there are any title issues or planning issues, they all should be sorted before I'm allowed to advertise it. And that way, we're not waiting 9 months on a house to close. I think that's a really simple thing that could change and that would improve the process here. But then there are more bigger picture things, like what we've been speaking about for the last while is like that societal shift in how we view housing, how we view homes, not looking at them as a pyramid scheme that we need to keep climbing. I hate that phrase, get on the ladder.
Yeah, so it implies that you want to go up.
That you have to
keep
climbing. Because that is what, you know, it's like, it just becomes this thing where you have to make more money on it because the next one
Correct.
Is going to cost more.
Even the concept of the ladder is
yeah. So is, people get, you know, vendors, when they're selling, they're like, they want to get as much as possible because they need to get as much as possible because the next one they're buying, the people selling that want to get as much as possible. And it just becomes this cycle of greed.
Yeah, it taps into the more extreme areas of greed in our economy.
Yeah.
In fact, it is, you're only be putting your money into property.
Mm.
You see, even that idea, you know, oh, the stocks are bad. Stick your money into property. You can never go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so this is that idea as well.
I just think
it's a marketable commodity. It's Bitcoin. It's gold. It's, you know, it's.
Yeah, it's within us, though, isn't it? It's how we look after ourselves when we get older. That it's your pension, you know. Your house, but that's only use to you if you can sell it and have somewhere else to live.
But even ontologically, it's so strange, though. You know, I mean, it is clear to anybody that is, you know, two legs and two arms. I know it sounds obvious to you, and it is. But sometimes, if you think about the most obvious things, it's crazy. You can only live in one house, literally. You can only live in one house, and yet there's a fella going, "No, I can live in 8. I can live in 15. I live in 20 houses." Mm. You know what I mean?
You've only one arse, you can't ride 2 saddles.
I have 8 arses! I have 8 arses! I have one arse in Perrystown. I have another arse in Manor House. I have another arse in Ballybrack. Thank you very much, Kieran. Fucking crazy house prices.
Yeah, it's just...
You look a bit like Daniel Day-Lewis, actually.
I get messy a lot. I get messy.
A bit of messy, yeah. A bit of messy.
Oh, I get that nonstop.
Do you get a bit of messy? Yeah.
All the time. I can't go to Aldi and Terranure.
You don't have his slanty eyes, though. Messi has a kind of a...
Don't have his money either.
No, but Messi has and he has loads of fucking houses as
I'm a bit taller than him as well. Well, Dermot Bannon doesn't seem to think so, but yeah, I'm a little bit taller.
I heard Messi couldn't afford a 2-bedroom flat out in Perrystown there.
Yeah, he would struggle here. He would struggle.
So you've told us the whole fascinating story behind crazy house prices. But what about you? How did the whole house hunting end up for you?
So we were being outbid. We'd done the whole mortgage thing. We had mortgage approval and we had good savings. We were very fortunate that because we're both dubs, we could live at home. We lived in my wife's parents' house. So we saved up our deposits.
And were they nice to live with? They were okay?
They actually, yeah, they weren't there that much either. So that made it better. But no, they're brilliant.
Late date night a bit easier, right? Anyway.
Yeah. No, they're fantastic. So, and my mom as well. We had a couple of options. A lot of people aren't that fortunate, you know, they may not have options and they have to rent, whereas we didn't, so very aware of how fortunate we were. But we just kept getting outbid, or we refused to get into bidding wars because I just would not pay more than I felt through my own research what that house was worth. And so we just stopped bidding on some things, and then we just decided to kind of, you know, take a break for a while. And then I had an idea to, I was like, okay, what's the problem here? As again, teacher head on, what's the problem here and how can we solve it? The problem is there was too many people trying to buy every home we were trying to buy. So I was like, okay, well, how do we cut those people out? We need to get rid of the estate agent, we need to get rid of the other people. So go direct to people who want to sell their house. So we wrote a letter. My wife, Melissa, wrote a letter. And in the letter, we kind of outlined, look, this is our gig. This is our story. We live here. We work here. We just want to start a family here and be close to our own family. If you want to sell your house, we have full mortgage approval. We're ready to go. And we can basically offer you a fairly hassle-free sale. You don't have to pay an estate agent. You don't have to stage the house for photos. You don't have to do any of this. And then you can kind of, you know, rest assured knowing that your house is going to be looked after by a family, you know, that really wants to live here and loves the area. So we did that, and we threw it around to kind of, I don't even know how many houses we did. It wasn't that many, like kind of 14, 15 or something. And we just got lucky. We got one email back, and it worked out just perfectly from there. Like, we dealt directly with the family that were selling the house, and was really nice. Like, we got to hear their stories about growing up in the area, and we were telling them our story about, you know, growing up in the area, and I work around the corner, and it was lovely. And since then, you know, I kind of posted about it, went kind of everywhere, and lots of people have had good success with the same off-market approach.
Okay.
So no estate agents involved, not to have a go at estate agents.
So just from your point of view then, would you, from your experience and from maybe your second-hand experience even, if you've had any, would you encourage people to possibly pursue an off-market approach?
I think it's a no-brainer, and I think it may go that way in the future where people can just sell their own house. Technology is a disruptor for kind of middlemen and anything. You know, you can buy your vegetables directly from a farm or whatever. It's one of those things, and I do think there will always be a market for estate agents. But for some people, you know, you can save 1.5-2% of the commission. You can save the hassle of viewings and all the rest. Now, it won't. It's obviously not suitable for everyone, but for us, it couldn't have been better. It was actually a really nice process, and I, doing what I do and running the page, I get so many stories in, and it's not a nice, buying a home in Ireland is not a nice positive experience for the vast majority of people. It's horrendous, and it's like, they just get it over the line and they've almost aged 10 years in the process. But for us, it was actually the opposite. It was really, really nice. And we could talk directly to the sellers, and there was just no drama. There was no stress. It was lovely. And even now, like, I still message one of their wives. Like, she's always messaging me on Instagram. Like, if I put a picture up, be like, oh, that used to be this part of the house when they had it, and now it's this. And they're like, oh, we love what you've done with the place. And it's lovely.
Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Your book is called?
How to Buy a Home in Ireland.
Brilliant. And congratulations winning the World Cup as well.
Thank you. Yeah, it took a while. I got there, though.
One call left, though. It's Michael O'Leary from Ryanair is on the line. Say hello.
I'm actually flying with you later on, Michael.
Right. Well, you think you are. I don't know if that flight is going to land successfully. Jesus Christ, I've never heard such poor mouth, pitiful, hungry, bungry, poor me, capitalist, greedy pig shite in all my life. There is no housing problem in Dublin. I have 100 unused Boeing 737s outlying in Swords at the moment. They all have a toilet. They all have at least 200 seats, which could be transported in and transformed into beds. I am prepared to put them for rent at $59.99 per day. Why won't you advertise that, Messi?
Well, do I have to pay more if I want to open windows or cook food? Is there a, you know, an extra €10 charge?
The cheese panini comes at an extra €40, but you do get a scratch card. Where are you flying to?
Brussels.
You are in your own.
Charleroi, yeah.
Very good. Kieran, that was great. Thank you very much. And sorry for those interruptions from those callers. I hope you dealt with them very well.
Thanks, Mario.
That's your empathy again shining through. Thank you. And that's it from Kieran Mulqueen and from me, Mario Rosenstock. check out Kieran's new book, How to Buy a Home in Ireland. Tell a friend, just one friend, about this podcast. And if you want to get in touch with me directly, it's mariorosenstock@gmail.com. Same time, same place. We'll be back next week. Take care.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.